You know, Jack Tischner, he's the interim director of the Paul Simon Public Policy Institute. Jack, and I'm dead serious, and I think you know that because you've known me long enough to know when I'm serious, I think.
Oh, I do.
That I've been looking forward to doing this with you for a really long time. See, there's this, and Jack does not remember this. So I'm watching this film footage from WSIU. This is way back. This is when foresting was a big issue and Save Our Shawnee was a group.
Oh, I remember that.
And Jack is being told in front of a film crew that he can't go down into the Shawnee National Forest. And the forest ranger there is probably still flinching occasionally when he hears your voice. I've never seen anybody read the Riot Act in a literal sense to someone like Jack did that day about the media, the right to access the information, to let people know what was going on. And I'm looking at him and going, that's my hero right there.
Well, you know what? I hate to take a hero down, but I think that was actually... Gary, I cannot remember his name, but I worked on that show.
Yeah?
But it was not me.
Okay. Well, I could swear, because that's the one that I affiliate with. I'm going, that's...
With the glasses and all that.
Right.
It's not Gary Marks. That's the other guy from the Southern. I'm drawing a blank.
Yeah.
But you worked on that program. In fact, I actually flew Dave Kidd over the Shawnee National Forest with a TV camera to shoot areas of the forest to show you what clear cutting looked like.
Well, and see, it was interesting because when I told David about that story, and Dave said, no, that wasn't me. That was Jack.
Oh, my gosh. No?
So,
well, you know, it's the mists of time.
That's right. Because we remember that story, and there's always something that you've got to get into to get the backstory.
I remember the day that they had buried the guys had buried themselves in the road there, the logging road, and chained themselves
right
to the gate that went into Fairview. I remember all that, and I remember then Congressman Glenn Pichard was there on the day and was trying to broker a peace agreement between the Forest Service and the protesters, and it was chaos.
Yes,
I remember I was running audio for Dave's camera, and a very burly state policeman or sheriff's deputy was hauling somebody off. I got trampled and knocked down. It was quite a day.
Yeah, like I said,
quite
still,
a day.
I'm still a big fan. Didn't change the fact. Jack, now, how do you like Interim Director Paul Simon, Public Policy Institute, or does the interim qualification of that bother you? I mean...
Oh, no, not at all. It's an honor to be here and work on the issues that the Institute's involved in. And, of course, I covered Paul for probably, it was over 20 years that I covered him as a public figure, first in Congress, then the U.S. Senate, his presidential campaign, and then when he started the Institute. So, no, it's a distinct honor to be here in any capacity and work with the fine professionals here at the Simon Institute. Working with John Jackson in particular is just a wonderful thing. He's been one of my favorite professors I never got a grade from.
Yeah,
over the years. He's a tremendous guy.
I've got one of the two of those too. You know, what's interesting is because, you know, when it came up, Jack, Paul Simon Public Policy Institute, I don't think when that was originally named, I got the fact that policy and how it goes in one end of the machine and comes out as law, as a discipline, as an act on the other. That how, I mean, policy is a mission statement, we'll call it, for lack of a better word. And, you know, Paul Simon Public Policy Institute has done things like prison reform and a lot of different areas. But now with the upcoming election looming, and it is looming, another candidate, Daniel Bliss, announcing
Daniel
yesterday,
Bliss, yeah.
Watching these numbers and the impact what they have, what they represent for the coming election, especially when it comes to the favorability ratings of the governor and the speaker. What has this new survey told you, Jack?
Well, it's telling in a number of areas. You can see that people have really fastened in on the budget debate, the budget impasse that's gone for nearly 2 years now. I believe it's 21st month. No other state's been in this situation since the Great Depression. It's a terrible situation, as we all know. Every day that goes by that we don't have a budget in place, we spend another $11 million, and we go that much further into debt. And the debt now is around the $12 billion mark. By the end of the fiscal year, it could be upwards of $14, $15 billion. The situation just keeps getting worse and worse. And a lot of this, of course, has rubbed off on Governor Rauner and Speaker Madigan because they're the two principal antagonists in this thing. And the way it breaks down, roughly 6 in 10 people that we surveyed, did 1,000 people a couple of weeks ago, 6 in 10 people disapprove of the job being done by both Madigan and Rauner. 61% for Madigan, Rauner is 58%. Last October, when we did the similar poll, Madigan's disapproval rating was 63%. Rauner's was at 55%. Both these guys are taking a beating. It's not good news for either one. You know, they both have their political fortunes riding on this in different ways. Bruce Rauner, of course, is going into an election campaign, a re-election campaign next year. He's running for his second term. He doesn't have a budget. It's very hard for him to say that he's got a great record coming into this, at least as you look at the budget issue. He's got some other accomplishments he can point to. Madigan, on the other hand, is trying to maintain his 67-member Democratic majority in the House. He lost a net 4 seats last November. A lot of that, of course, came after a ton of negative advertising spent tying Madigan to Democratic candidates, and we saw that had a telling effect down here with Gary Forby and John Bradley and a number of other Democratic candidates around the state had smaller margins of victory because of that. So, you know, there's a lot at stake in this. Madigan, of course, doesn't run statewide. He only runs in the 22nd House District up in Chicago. He's pretty much assured of that, but, you know, his name is attached to all the other Democratic candidates. And you mentioned Dan Biss yesterday. Well, they're already tying, the Republicans are already tying Dan Biss to Speaker Madigan. So you see how that thing goes. But the striking thing about the numbers is the governor's approval rating going back to 2015 after he was sworn into office was relatively steady. It was in the high 30s and low 40s. At 36%, though, now it's the lowest we've seen. His disapproval rating now has grown from 31% disapproving in March of 2015 to 58% today. So that's almost doubled. That's an observation by Charlie Leonard, who was one of the designers of the poll and a former visiting professor here at the Institute. So not good numbers for either guy.
And when you did these polls, you talked about 1,000 statewide from north to south. Because when you look at this, you can't help but think somewhere else they've done some polling, too, in preparation for the upcoming election. They keep an eye on these numbers. We don't always see the polls. They keep them inside the building, in their respective buildings, that is. But it would be very hard to run a re-election campaign going into this with a 38% approval rating.
Yeah, if you look at this, 36% somewhat or strongly approve of his performance, 58% somewhat disapprove or strongly disapprove. That compares with a 40% approval rating and 55% disapproval rating last October. As you say, we looked at this statewide. He fares worse with city voters in the city of Chicago. 64% disapprove of his performance there, while 31% approve. That's not too unexpected. You know, Chicago, of course, is a Democratic Party stronghold there. You pretty much, if you win your Democratic primary in Chicago, you're pretty much, you know, assured of winning your general election. He gets a little closer to positive territory in downstate Illinois, and by downstate, we mean anything outside of the Chicago, Cook County, and the collar counties. Right. I don't like the term downstate, but, you know, that's the one that everyone pretty much reads, uses as demographic analyst. 38% of his of the people we surveyed approve of the job he's doing, compared to 56% in Cook County and the collar counties. He's still in negative territory. That's 58% disapproving, 37% approving, and he's done better there. He's done better there in the past. So that points to real trouble in the collar counties, which have also been up until recently Republican strongholds. So that's not good news for him.
You know,
you want to break it down along party lines? Among Republicans, 14% strongly disapprove of his job performance, 17% somewhat disapprove. The total percentage there is 31% disapproval, 27% of Republicans strongly approve of his performance, 37% somewhat approve. That's 63% overall.
Jack, when it comes to this, did you get any numbers, by the way, with what labor thinks about this, Governor? Because there is such an organized labor voting bloc.
Yeah, he doesn't do well with labor at all.
Right. So when it comes to this, I mean, Jack, it's almost like some bizarre mad policy, mutual assured destruction. I mean, nothing is done. The mud splatters on both parties. Is it a matter of trying to get the most mud on the other person right now because they're in such negative numbers? I mean, going into this and the uncooperative nature of what people are seeing, we're all going down. It's really is like how much mud I can get on this because we're all covered in it.
Well, you're calling it right on the line there, Tom. That is unfortunately the situation we're in. If you look at what the analysts are saying about the numbers after they came out last week, you're basically seeing that they expect that Rauner will, of course, try to continue tying anyone he can to any Democrat's going to be tied to Madigan, whether it's Dan Biss or J.B. Pritzker or Chris Kennedy, whomever. They're going to try to tie them in some way to Mike Madigan. On the other hand, you know, I think the Democrats are going to take a strong run at Rauner's disapproval numbers. You saw that somewhat. Dan Biss, of course, raised a ton of money last year in the general election campaign to go after Republican candidates and Bruce Rauner in particular for basically the same thing, the failure to get a budget approved. So, unfortunately, yeah, we're in that situation. And, there's a corrosive effect when it comes to all the money that's being spent in these things. They spent around, both parties spent roughly $100 million on last year's election. The Democrats edged them, the Republicans slightly by about a little over 51%, I think the figure was, but they were about 50-50 on that. And you're going to see more and more of that as we go into this thing. The governor's already wrote a $50 million check for his campaign going into 2018. There's going to be tons of money spent on this thing. I don't think it's going to get any better. It's, if nothing else, it's going to get worse. So I expect you're going to see a ton. The closer we get into next year and into next year, you're going to be bombarded by negative ads from both parties, and you're going to be wallpapered at the House with all those mailers you're going to get.
And with the level of fatigue from the last one, it's really going to exacerbate, because people, quite frankly, are in a state of grief, at least some of America is, over the last election and us turning back around into it. I don't know how it's going, because we're watching the election still play out on Fox and CNN and every news story, you know, right now. And people get a point where they go, they hold their nose and they turn their head. And that's one of the things I'm concerned about, because people think this. And you and I, when we casually ran into each other Saturday, this came up as part of the conversation. And it's one of the things I think is important. Jack Tischner is joining us this morning, interim director for the Paul Simon Public Policy Institute. And that is the numbers from surveys that seem to indicate a lot of people say, well, the state budget or lack thereof has not affected me.
Well, yeah, we're working on that. That particular poll hasn't come out yet, but what we're seeing is people are roughly in about the same place they were last time we surveyed back in, I think it was in the last year or so. Most people say that the budget situation hasn't really impacted them, and I'm a little surprised by that, but yet I'm not, because like we were talking on Saturday when we ran into each other, 90% of the budget is being spent on autopilot, okay? So we're basically taking in about $32 to $33 billion in income tax receipts every year. And we're continuing to spend at 38, 39, some say close to $40 billion a year. And that money's kind of like being done on a credit card, okay? Most people, you know, just kind of, you know, yeah, my balance is getting bigger, but I'm okay right now. Well, at some point, you're going to reach a point of you're going to be technically insolvent. You can't continue to, you run out of your reserves at some point. Well, we're not running out of reserve, but what we're doing is we're building up this gigantic amount of debt. So we were talking the other day, Tom, about, you know, $14 billion worth of debt at the end of fiscal year 2017. Well, you get nothing for those interest payments that you pay on that, you know? That's money you might as well take out in the parking lot and set fire to it, because you're not going to get anything out of it. We need need to get this thing done. There's going to be further pressure on them to get it done if they downgrade Illinois' bond rating to junk bond status, and we're very close to that. That means you won't be able to sell bonds to take care of debt. You won't be able to sell bonds to build roads. The governor says he wants a capital plan. I know that the Democrats want a capital plan. Well, it's very hard to fund those things if you can't sell bonds and get any kind of decent rate out of them, you know. So there's all of that coming back. There's all of that at the background. So most people are not feeling a lot of effects from the budget stalemate, but the damage that's being done is incredible. At the same time, you've got the situation with higher education around the state and a lot of the social safety net programs. They're going under. A lot of those social service agencies are shutting down. The places that do alcohol, drug abuse treatment, those places, they were running on fumes. A lot of them have nothing left in the tank. They're going out of business. Well, you look at the situation with some of the universities, they're in dire straits. Chicago State's in trouble, deep trouble there. They've lost almost half their enrollment, if I remember the figures correctly.
They're talking about closing a week early this year.
Yeah, they're in serious shape. Western Illinois University is in terrible shape. Eastern Illinois University, where my daughter went, is in terrible shape. They've laid off a couple of hundred people up there. Well, look at the impact of what that does to the city economy in a place like Charleston. Look what it does in a place like Carbondale. In the meantime, you have it's very difficult to recruit top faculty. It's very difficult to keep them because of a situation like this, because they go, hey, I'd like to think about coming to Illinois, but I see you haven't really had a budget in 2 years almost, and you have this patchwork of things for higher ed going on, and I'm not sure I want to pull up stakes and move my family here for that.
Right.
This has done, you know, some of the damage that's being done in this situation is not going to be repaired in my lifetime.
Second,
I got to thinking about that last night.
Jack,
some of the impacts of this are going to go on for decades.
We're talking about second and third order of effect, which people very often don't see and appreciate in the way that it works, because you just think about the bottom line, and there are other effects. And here's one, the overall fatigue. I mean, if we talked about the campaign fatigue, but let's take an Illinois taxpayer, let's take an Illinois voter and say, look, you know, you owe this portion for the pension. You owe this much for back bills. Oh, and by the way, we're at $19 trillion U.S. dollars. So for every man, woman, and child in this country, $61,000. So by the time you're done, if you're an Illinoisan, you really feel under the gun in a very literal sense, because that's your part of the tab.
Yeah, I think the controller yesterday had a couple of days ago had a figure out that said because of the budget impasse, everybody, all 12 million plus Illinoisans owe $1,000 because of the impasse. Well, you got a complicated situation there, Tom. What we found in our latest polling on this was, given three options for addressing the deficit, 45%, of course, favor cutting waste and efficiency is the only way to handle the problem. 11% now favor a tax increase. 35%, though, now agree with the statement that the state budget crisis is going to require both budget cuts and an increase in revenue. While the 35% of those who choose the option are added into the 11% who say they favor a tax increase, the results 46% total who favor both raising taxes and cutting spending, while 45% believe that cutting waste and inefficiency is sufficient. So you're basically deadlocked there, well within the 3% margin of error. And that makes it extremely hard for policymakers to go out, meaning lawmakers, to go out and vote on these things, because you're basically handing them a situation where they voting for a tax increase is going to be tough. Then voting at the same time for budget cuts while you're raising people's taxes is even tougher. You give them two bad choices all rolled up in one thing, and that makes the situation even worse.
Well, it's interesting, Jack. I read a book, and I'm thinking this is the one, Why Smart People Do Stupid Things. And I'm thinking that's where I read this, that people who are, as a rule, very intelligent, when they find a solution, when they find a problem that they do not see a solution to, they choose avoidance.
Yeah, and it's interesting you say that, because one of the things that really comes out about this is we gave folks a list of things, a list of areas that could be cut. You know, we talked about waste and inefficiency and all that. Well, we gave them some options. Do you want to cut K through 12 school spending? Why, no, we don't want to do that. Do you want to cut higher education? Oh, gosh, no, we don't want to do that. Vast majority of people say no. Well, what about prisons and public safety? Oh, no, we need those. You know, they basically want to have everything that they're getting, but they don't want to pay for it. It's right. Like the old joke, everybody wants to go to heaven, but nobody wants to die first. Part of the problem in Illinois is we've had, you've probably talked about property taxes on your program a number of times over the years.
Yeah.
Well, our property taxes are high, very high. Part of that comes because the income tax rate has been relatively low historically. There's an over-reliance on property taxes here to fund schools, things like that, and our 7,000 units of local government. So the income tax is out there. It's always been fairly low since 1970, since the Constitutional Convention. It's 3.75% right now. You look at states around us, most of their rates are higher, and a lot of those are states where you basically have progressive income tax rates, so the more you make, the more you end up paying.
Right.
Some of those also have municipal tax rates. But the end result is you've got folks at the end of the day who still don't want to raise taxes, but they want all the things that come from basically tax money.
Right. And we're paying that money in interest now, so we don't get it, right?
And we haven't even talked about the $130 billion pension crisis.
Right. So how about next time? I'm looking forward to our next chance to talk.
Me too.
Jack Tischer.
Oh, hey, Tom, I remembered who the other reporter was. That was Gary Wolf.
I do remember Gary Wolf.
Yeah, formerly of the Southern Illinoisan.
Yeah, I do remember Gary.
And it's an honor to be mistaken for him.
Well, that was 28 years ago?
Yeah, I know.
27?
Time flies when you're having fun.
Ain't that the truth?
Hey, and I had fun today.
I did too, Jack. I really do appreciate